The cold black vacuum had been left behind. The pulses were now approaching an ordinary yellow dwarf star, and had already begun spilling over the retinue of worlds in this obscure system. Now the pulses were washing against a warm world, blue and white, spinning against the backdrop of the stars. There was life on this world, extravagant in its numbers and variety. A particular life form, with a modicum of intelligence, had recently spread across the planet. They had outposts on the ocean floors and in low-altitude orbit. They had swarmed to every nook and cranny of their small world. The first pulses in the train of radio waves insinuated themselves through the atmosphere and clouds, struck the landscape, and were partially reflected back to space. As the Earth turned beneath them, successive pulses arrived, engulfing not just this one planet, but the entire system. Very little of the energy was intercepted by any of the worlds. Most of it passed effortlessly onward, as the yellow star and its attendant worlds plunged into the inky dark. The duty officer, Willie, entered the control area to begin the night shift. A few of the telescopes he could see were devoted to picking up some missed data in Hercules. The remainder were aiming boresighted at an adjacent patch of sky, the next constellation east of Hercules. To people in the eastern Mediterranean a few thousand years ago, it had resembled a stringed musical instrument. It was named Lyra, the lyre. The computers turned the telescopes to follow the stars in Lyra from star rise to star set, accumulated the radio photons, monitored the health of the telescopes, and processed the data in a format convenient for their human operators. Willie approached the command console and nodded pleasantly to Steve, the afternoon duty officer, now collecting his notes and preparing to leave for dinner. "As you can see, nothing much. There was a pointing glitch, at least that's what it looked like in 49. Steve waved vaguely toward the window. "The Quasar bunch freed up the 110s and 120s about an hour ago. They seem to be getting very good data." "Yeah, I heard. I don't understand." An alarm light flashed decorously on the console in front of them. On a display marked intensity versus frequency, a sharp vertical spike was rising. "Hey, look, it's a monochromatic signal." Another display labeled intensity versus time showed a set of pulses moving left to right and then off the screen. Willie frowned. "Those are numbers. Somebody's broadcasting numbers." "It's probably some Air Force interference. I saw them in AWACS about 1600 hours. Maybe they're spoofing us for fun." Briskly, Ellie entered the control area and approached the main console. "Evening, Willie, Steve. Let's see the data." Her fingers were punching away at a keyboard as she talked. "Vega, only 26 light years away. It's been observed before, always with negative results. I looked at it myself in my first Arecibo survey. Absolute intensity? Holy smoke, that's hundreds of Janskys. You can practically pick that up on your FM radio. Okay, so we have a bogey very near to Vega in the plane of the sky. It's at a frequency around 9.2 gigahertz and not very monochromatic. The bandwidth is a few hundred hertz. It's linearly polarized and it's transmitting a set of moving pulses restricted to two different amplitudes. It's being received by 116 individual telescopes. Clearly, it's not a malfunction in one or two of them. Okay, now we should have plenty of time baseline. Is it moving with the stars? Or could it be some satellite or aircraft?" "I can confirm sidereal motion, Dr. Airway." "Okay, that's pretty convincing. It's not down here on Earth, and it probably isn't from an artificial satellite in millennial orbit. Although we should check that out. When you get a chance, Willie, call up NORAD and see what they say about the satellite possibility." "If we can exclude satellites, that'll leave two possibilities. It's a hoax, or somebody has finally gotten around to sending us a message. Steve, do a manual override. Check a few individual radio telescopes. The signal strength is certainly large enough. And see if there's any chance this is a practical joke." A handful of other scientists and technicians alerted on their buzzers by the Argus computer had gathered around the command console. There were half smiles on their faces. None of them was thinking seriously of a message from another world quite yet, but there was perhaps a faint air of expectation. "If any of you can think of any other explanation besides extraterrestrial intelligence, I want to hear about it." "There's no way it could be Vega, Dr. Arroway. The system's only a few hundred million years old. Its planets are still in the process of forming. There isn't time for intelligent life to have developed there. It has to be some background star or galaxy." Someone else said, But then the transmitter power has to be ridiculously large. We need to get going right away on a sensitive proper motion study so we can see if the radio source moves with Vega. You're right about the proper motion, Jack, but there's another possibility. Maybe they didn't grow up in the Vega system. Maybe they're just visiting. That's no good either, Ellie. The system is full of debris. It's a failed solar system, or a solar system still in its early stages of development. If they stay very long, their spacecraft will be clobbered. Okay, so they only arrived recently, or they vaporize incoming meteorites, or they take evasive action if there's a piece of debris on a collision trajectory, or they're not in the ring plane, but in polar orbit, so they minimize their encounters with the debris. There's a million possibilities. But you're absolutely right. We don't have to guess whether the source is in the Vega system. We can actually find out. How long will that proper motion study take? Willie got off the phone with NORAD. Major Braintree swears up and down they have nothing that'll give this signal, especially not at 9 gigahertz. Of course, they tell us that every time we call. Anyway, he says they haven't detected any spacecraft at the right ascension and declination of Vega. All right, what about DARCs? There were many DARC satellites, with low radar cross-sections, designed to orbit the Earth unannounced and undetected until an hour of need. Then they would serve as backups for launch detection or communications in a nuclear war, in case the first-line military satellites were suddenly missing in action. Occasionally, a DARC would be detected by one of the major astronomical radar systems. All nations would deny that the object belonged to them, and breathless speculation would erupt that an extraterrestrial spacecraft had been detected in Earth orbit. As the millennium approached, the UFO cults were thriving again. Interferometry now rules out a Molyneux-type orbit, Dr. Arroway. Better and better. Now, let's take a closer look at these moving pulses. Assuming that this is binary arithmetic, has anybody converted into base 10? Do we know what the sequence of numbers is? Okay, here we can do it in our heads. 59, 61, 67, 71. Now, aren't these all prime numbers? A flutter of excitement was quickly replaced by sobriety, a fear of being carried away, an apprehension about appearing foolish, unscientific. Okay, let's see if I can do a quick summary. We have an extremely strong, not very monochromatic signal. Immediately outside the bandpass of this signal, there are no other frequencies reporting anything besides noise. The signal is linearly polarized, as if it's being broadcast by a radio telescope. It's around 9 gigahertz, near the minimum in the galactic radio noise background. It's the right kind of frequency for anyone who wants to be heard over a big distance. We've confirmed sidereal motion of the source, so it's moving as if it's up there among the stars and not from some local transmitter. NORAD tells us that they don't detect any satellites, ours or anybody else's, that match the position of this source. Interferometry excludes a source in Earth orbit anyway. Steve has looked at the data outside the automated mode, and it doesn't seem to be a program that somebody with a warped sense of humor put into the computer. The region of the sky we're looking at includes Vega, which is an A0 main sequence dwarf star. It's not exactly like the Sun, but it's only 26 light years away, and it has the prototype stellar debris ring. There are no known planets, but there certainly could be planets we don't know anything about. We are setting up a proper motion study to see if the source is well behind our line of sight to Vega, and we should have an answer in, what, a few weeks if we're restricted on our own, and a few hours if we do some long baseline interferometry. Finally, what's being sent seems to be a long sequence of prime numbers, integers that can't be divided by any other number except themselves and one. No astrophysical process is likely to generate prime numbers, so I'd say, we want to be cautious, of course, but I'd say that by every criterion we can lay our hands on, this looks like the real thing. But there's a problem with the idea that this is a message from guys who evolved on some planet around Vega, because they would have had to evolve very fast. The entire lifetime of the star is only about 400 million years. It's an unlikely place for the nearest civilization. So the proper motion study is very important, but I sure would like to check out that hoax possibility some more. One of the quasar survey astronomers said, Vega is going to set in another couple of hours. It's probably already risen in Australia. Can't we call Sydney and get them looking at it at the same time that we're still seeing it? Good idea. It's only middle afternoon there, and together we'll have enough baseline for the proper motion study. Give me that summary printout, and I'll telefax it to Australia from my office. With deliberate composure, Ellie left the assembled group crowded around the consoles and returned to her office. She closed the door very carefully behind her. Holy shit. The visiting scientists' quarters were now all occupied, indeed overcrowded, by selected luminaries of the SETI community. When the official delegations began arriving from Washington, they had to be billeted at motels in nearby Socorro. Kenneth Durhier, the president's science advisor, was the only exception. He had arrived the day after the discovery in response to an urgent call from Eleanor Arroway. The scientists were running a continuous research seminar on the nature, origin, and possible significance of the radio pulses. Ellie, who was obliged to brief the senior officials, supervise the ongoing research, and respond to the entirely proper skeptical scrutiny being offered with some vigor by her colleagues, was exhausted. The luxury of a full night's sleep had eluded her since the discovery. At first, they had tried to keep the finding quiet. After all, they were not absolutely sure it was an extraterrestrial message. But the scientists had told their families, and an International Astronomical Union telegram had been sent all over the world. Television camera crews in air taxis and helicopters began making low passes over the facility, sometimes generating strong radio interference. Reporters stalked the officials from Washington when they returned to their motels at night. A few of the press had attempted to enter the facility by beach buggy, motorcycle, or even horseback. Ellie had been forced to inquire about bulk rates on cyclone fencing. Immediately after Durhier arrived, he had received an early version of what was by now Ellie's standard briefing. The surprising intensity of the signal, its location in very much the same part of the sky as the star Vega, the nature of the pulses. "I may be the president's science advisor, but I'm a biologist, so please explain it to me slowly. I understand that if the radio source is 26 light-years away, then the message had to be sent 26 years ago. In the 1960s, some funny-looking people with pointy ears thought we'd want to know that they like prime numbers. But prime numbers aren't difficult. It's not like they're boasting. It's more like they're sending us remedial arithmetic. Maybe we should be insulted." She smiled. "No, look at it this way. This is a beacon. It's an announcement signal. Prime numbers are very specific, very artificial. It's hard to imagine some radiating plasma or exploding galaxy sending out a regular set of mathematical signals like this. The prime numbers are to attract our attention." "But what for?" "Well, I don't know. But in this business, you have to be very patient. Maybe in a while the prime numbers will turn off and be replaced by something else, the real message. We just have to keep on listening." This was the hardest part to explain to the press, that the signals had essentially no content, no meaning. Just the first few hundred prime numbers in order, a cycling back to the beginning, and again, the simple binary arithmetic representations. It was only a few days after the receipt of the message, but she was at once exhilarated and deeply disappointed. After all these years, they had finally received a signal, sort of. But its content was hollow, shallow, empty. She had imagined receiving the Encyclopedia Galactica. "We've only achieved the capacity for radio astronomy in the last few decades," she reminded herself, "in a galaxy where the average star is billions of years old. The chance of receiving a signal from a civilization exactly as advanced as we are should be minuscule. If they were even a little bit behind us, they would lack the technological capability to communicate with us at all. So the most likely signal would come from a civilization much more advanced." But she couldn't get into their minds. By definition, it has to be mighty hard to understand the behavior of a being much smarter than you are. But even so, why only prime numbers? The Argus radio astronomers had made progress in the past few days. Working together with radio observatories in West Virginia and Australia, they had determined that the source was moving with Vega. Not only was the signal coming, as carefully as they could measure, from where Vega was in the sky, but the signal also shared the peculiar and characteristic motions of Vega. As soon as the discovery had been made, Ellie had assigned a handful of the telescopes to examine Vega in a range of other frequencies. Sure enough, they had found the same signal, the same monotonous succession of prime numbers, beeping away in the 1420 megahertz hydrogen line, the 1667 megahertz hydroxyl line, and at many other frequencies. All over the radio spectrum, Vega was bleeding out prime numbers. Both David Drumlin and Peter Valerian had come down from Caltech. Drumlin was still skeptical.
"It doesn't make sense. We couldn't have missed it before. Everybody's looked at Vega for years. Arroway observed it from Arecibo a decade ago. And suddenly, last Tuesday, Vega starts broadcasting prime numbers. And why now? How come they start transmitting just a few years after Argus starts listening?
Valerian shrugged. There are all those other candidate planets that might have life on them, you know? We're probably not the only kid on the block.
But Drumlin, plainly dissatisfied, only shook his head. Between the scientists and the bureaucrats, there was a kind of unease, a mutual discomfort, a clash of fundamental assumptions. One of the electrical engineers called it an impedance mismatch.
The bureaucrats thought the scientists were too speculative, too quantitative, and too casual about talking to anybody. The scientists thought the bureaucrats were too unimaginative, too qualitative, too uncommunicative. Ellie, and especially Presidential Science Advisor Dirhir, tried hard to bridge the gap, but the pontoons kept being swept downstream.
Introducing a newcomer from Washington and positioning himself just a step behind him, Dirhir was communicating.
What?
Bemusement in the arms of prudence?
He seemed to be appealing for restraint. Did he think her such a hothead?
Dr. Arroway, this is Michael Kitts, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Communications and Intelligence.
Kitts settled himself across the desk from Ellie and leaned forward.
Dr. Arroway, let me come right to the point. We're concerned about whether it's in the best interest of the United States for this information to be generally known. We were not overjoyed by your sending that telegram all over the world.
You wanted to keep the first 261 prime numbers secret? Do you suppose, Mr. Kitts, that the extraterrestrials intended to communicate only with Americans? And don't you think that a message from another civilization belongs to the whole world?
You might have asked our advice.
And risked losing the signal? Look, for all we know, something essential, something unique might have been broadcast after Vega had set here in New Mexico, but when it was high in the sky over Beijing. In any case, it's too late. Everybody knows now that there's some kind of intelligent life in the Vega system.
I'm not sure it's too late, Dr. Arroway. You seem to think there'll be some information-rich transmission, a message still to come. Dr. Dirhir says, you think these prime numbers are an announcement to make us pay attention. If there is a message, and it's subtle, something those other countries wouldn't pick up right away, I want it kept quiet until we can talk about it.
Many of us have wants, Mr. Kitts.
She ignored Dirhir's raised eyebrows. There was something irritating, almost provocative, about Kitts's manner, and probably hers as well.
I, for example, have a want to understand what the meaning of this signal is, and what's happening on Vega, and what it means for the Earth. It's possible that scientists in other nations are the key to that understanding, and maybe we'll need their data. Maybe we'll need their brains. I can imagine this might be a problem too big for one country to handle all by itself.
Dirhir appeared faintly alarmed.
Dr. Arroway, Secretary Kitts's suggestion isn't all that unreasonable. It's very possible we'd bring other nations in. All he's asking is to talk about it with us first, and that's only if there's a new message.
Ellie looked at him closely. Dirhir was not a patently handsome man, but he had a kind and intelligent face. His seriousness and air of self-possession were moderated by the warmth of his smile. Why, then, was he shilling for this jerk? Part of his job? Could it be that Kitts was talking sense?
It's a remote contingency, anyway.
Kitts sighed as he got to his feet. The Secretary of Defense would appreciate your cooperation.
Agreed?
Let me think about it, she replied, taking his proffered hand as if it were a dead fish.
I'll be along in a few minutes, Mike, Dirhir said.
The moment Kitts left her office, Ellie began talking.
What's he after? The Vegan death rays? What's this really about? You're President Lasker's science advisor. What did you advise her?
I haven't advised her anything, and I'll be frank with you. I thought what Kitts said was way off base. I think he's acting on his own.
Who is he?
As far as I know, he's a lawyer, who was a top executive in the electronics industry before joining the administration.
Ken, I trust you. I believe you didn't set me up for this. Do you know that Drumlin thinks there's another message in the polarization?
I don't understand.
Just a few hours ago, Dave finished a rough statistical study of the polarization. Dirhir looked at her blankly. Ellie asked herself, don't biologists use polarized light in their microscopes? When a wave of light comes at you, she explained, clockwise, the polarization is called right-handed. Counterclockwise, it's left-handed. I know it's a dumb designation. Anyway, by varying between the two kinds of polarization, you could transmit information. A little right polarization, and that's a zero. A little left, and it's a one. You follow? We have amplitude modulation and frequency modulation, but our civilization, by convention, ordinarily just doesn't do polarization modulation. Well, the Vega signal looks as if it has polarization modulation, and we're busy checking it out right now. But Dave found that it wasn't left polarized as much as it was right polarized. It's just possible that there is another message in the polarization that we've missed so far. That's why I'm suspicious about your friend. Kitz isn't just giving me general gratuitous advice. He knows we may be onto something here.
Ellie, take it easy. Look, you've hardly slept for 4 days. You've been juggling the science, the administration, and the press. You've already made one of the major discoveries of the century. And if I understand you right, you might be on the verge of something even more important. I don't have any trouble understanding why you're suspicious of Kitz, but there's some sense to what he says.
Do you know the man?
I've been in a few meetings with him, Ellie. If there's a possibility of a real message coming in, wouldn't it be a good idea to thin out the crowd a little?
Sure. Give me a hand with some of the Washington deadwood.
Okay. She looked at him.
You're going to help?
If the situation stays anything like what it is now, I'll help. We're not going to make our best effort if this thing gets classified. It was a group of about 30 people, some associated with Project Argus, a few senior government officials, among them Valerian, Drumlin, Kitz, and Erhir. Ellie was the only woman. They had set up a large television screen against the far wall, and Ellie was simultaneously addressing the group and the decryption program, her fingers on the keyboard.
Over the years, we've prepared for the computer decryption of many kinds of possible messages, and we just learned from Dr. Drumlin's analysis that there's information in the polarization modulation. Now, all that frenetic switching between left and right means something. The precise sequence of left and right repeats. It's a long sequence, so it's a pretty complicated message, and the transmitting civilization must want us to be sure to get it right. Now, we analyze the total number of bits. It's a number in the tens of billions. Okay, bingo. It's the product of three prime numbers. Now, we think that means, you know, maybe, that we're being sent a picture. Three dimensions. Either a stationary hologram or a two-dimensional picture that moves. On the screen, they made out an indistinct moving pattern of perfect whites and perfect blacks. Willie, put in some gray interpolation program, would you? Anything reasonable, and try rotating it about 90 degrees. Dr. Arroway, there seems to be an auxiliary sideband channel. Maybe it's the audio to go with the movie. Punch it up. The picture, still unintelligible, was joined by a deep, rumbling glissando, sliding first up and then down the audio spectrum until it gravitated to rest somewhere around the octave below middle C. Slowly, the group became aware of faint but swelling music. The picture rotated, rectified, and focused. Ellie found herself staring at a black-and-white grainy image of a massive reviewing stand adorned with an immense Art Deco eagle. Clutched in the eagle's concrete talons, hoax! It's a hoax! There were cries of astonishment, incredulity, laughter, a mild hysteria. A Drumlin spoke almost conversationally.
You've been hoodwinked. It's an elaborate practical joke. You've been wasting the time of everybody here.
Clutched in the eagle's concrete talons was a swastika. The camera zoomed in above the eagle to find the smiling face of Adolf Hitler waving to a rhythmically chanting crowd. The deep baritone voice of an announcer, scratchy but unmistakably speaking German, filled the room. She looked at Derhir.
You know German?
He nodded.
The Führer welcomes the world to the German fatherland for the opening of the 1936 Olympic Games.
Ellie and Ken Derhir arrived in Washington for their meeting. Ellie was, she admitted to herself, a little nervous. She had never met a president before, and she wondered how the president would respond to the Vega transmission, on which some public comment would have to be made.
What do you mean, Ken, they get out?
I mean, Miss President, that our television signals leave this planet and go out into space. Now, the signals spread out from the Earth in spherical waves, a little like ripples in a pond. They travel at the speed of light and essentially go on forever. Now, the better some other civilizations' receivers are, the farther away they could be and still pick up our TV signals. Even we could detect a strong TV transmission from a planet going around the nearest star. For a moment, the president stood ramrod straight, staring out the French doors into the rose garden. She turned toward their hair.
You mean everything? All that crap? The car crashes, the wrestling, the porno channels?
Everything, Miss President. Derheer shook his head in sympathetic consternation. Those few minutes of television from Vega were originally broadcast in 1936 at the opening of the Olympic Games in Berlin. Now, even though it was only shown in Germany, it was the first television transmission on Earth with even moderate power. Unlike the ordinary radio transmission in the 30s, those TV signals got through our ionosphere and trickled out into space. And 26 years later, it was picked up on some planet of the star Vega, so from their point of view, Hitler is the first sign of intelligent life on Earth. Now, I'm not trying to be ironic. They don't know what the transmission means, so they record it and transmit it back to us. It's a way of saying, hello, we heard you. It seems to me a pretty friendly gesture. But it takes another 26 years for the Berlin Olympics to return to Earth, so the Vegans didn't take decades to figure it out. They must have been pretty much all set up waiting for our first television signals. Dr. Arroway thinks this civilization is monitoring all the nearby planetary systems to see if any of its neighbors develop high technology. Adolf Hitler, Ken? It makes me furious. 40 million people die to defeat that megalomaniac, and he's the star of the first broadcast to another civilization? He's representing us? It's that madman's wildest dream come true! She paused and continued in a calmer voice.
What if the Nazis hadn't had television in 1936?
Well, then I suppose it would be the coronation of George VI, or one of the transmissions about the New York World's Fair in 1939, if any of them were strong enough. Or Howdy Doody, Milton Berle, the Army McCarthy hearings, all those marvelous signs of intelligent life on Earth. The president shook her head. What are they going to think of us? Toward the end of an informal joint meeting of the National Security Council and the Special Contingency Task Group, the Director of Central Intelligence summarized the official government position. So far, nothing of military or any other interest has been received, though their ability to receive a very weak signal and to return it at such high power levels is impressive. All they've been saying is that they're good at radio astronomy, they like prime numbers, and they can send our first TV transmissions back to us. It couldn't hurt for any other nation to know that. And remember, all those other countries are receiving this same 3-minute Hitler clip over and over again. They just haven't figured out how to read it yet. Someone is likely to tumble to this polarization modulation sooner or later. My personal impression, Miss President, I don't know if State agrees, is that it would be better if we released it to the world before we're accused of covering something up. At this point, Ellie and Peter Valerian slipped into the room, trying not to disrupt the meeting. Derheer directed the president's attention to them. Dr. Arroway, I'm glad to see you've arrived safely. First, let me congratulate you on a splendid discovery. Splendid. We understand you have something new. Would you care to tell us about it? Miss President, I'm sorry to be late, but I think we've just hit the cosmic jackpot. This signal from Vega is, of course, very strong. Now, as you know, there's the prime numbers, and underneath them, in what's called polarization modulation, this eerie Hitler business. But underneath the prime numbers and the Olympic broadcasts, we've just uncovered an incredibly rich message. At least we're pretty sure it's a message. As far as we can tell, it's been there all along. Now, we've just detected it. It's weaker than the announcement signal, but I'm embarrassed we didn't find it sooner. What does it say? What's it about? We haven't the foggiest idea, Miss President. Some of the people at Project Argus tumbled to it early this morning. We've been working on it all night. Secretary Kitts looked up. Over an open phone? With standard commercial encryption. We get a block of information comprising about 1,000 bits. There'll be a pause, and then the same block will be repeated. Then there'll be another pause, and we'll go on to the next block. The repetition is probably to minimize transmission errors. They must think it's very important that we get whatever it is they're saying down accurately. Now let's call each of these blocks of information a page. Argus is picking up a few dozen of these pages a day. But we don't know what they're about. They're not a simple picture code like the Olympics message. This is something much deeper and much richer. It appears to be, for the first time, information they've generated. Now, the only clue we have so far is that the pages seem to be numbered in binary arithmetic. Right now, we're on page 10,413. It's a big book. Calculating back, it seems that the message began about 3 months ago. We're lucky to have picked it up as early as we did. Kitz leaned across the table to Dahir. I was right, wasn't I? This isn't the kind of message you want to give to the Japanese or the Chinese or the Russians, is it? The president was still talking to Ellie. Is it going to be easy to figure out? We will, of course, make our best efforts, and it probably would be useful to have the National Security Agency work on it also. But without an explanation from Vega, without a primer, my guess is that we're not going to make much progress. It certainly doesn't seem to be written in any earthly language. Our hope is that the message will come to an end, maybe on page 20,000 or 30,000, and then start right over from the beginning, so we'll be able to fill in the missing parts. Maybe before the whole message repeats, there'll be a primer that will enable us to understand it.
If I may, Miss President.
Please, go ahead, Dr. Valerian.
This is an intentional transmission to us. They know we're here. They have some idea from having intercepted our 1936 broadcast of where our technology is, of how smart we are. They wouldn't be going to all this trouble if they didn't want us to understand the message.
Now, somewhere in there is the key. It's only a question of accumulating all the data and analyzing it very carefully.
Well, what do you suppose the message is about? I don't see any way to tell, Miss President. The star Vega is about 3 times more massive than the Sun and about 50 times brighter. Because it burns its nuclear fuel so fast, it has a much shorter lifetime than the Sun.
The director of Central Intelligence interrupted.
Maybe something's about to go wrong on Vega. Maybe their planet will be destroyed and they want someone else to know about their civilization before they're wiped out.
Secretary Kitz picked up the idea.
Maybe they're just looking for a new place to move to and the Earth would suit them just fine.
Ellie couldn't let that idea pass.
Hold on, there's a lot of possibilities, but not everything is possible. There is no way for the transmitting civilization to know whether we've received the message, much less whether we're making any progress in decoding it. If we find the message offensive, we're not obliged to reply. And even if we did, it would be 26 years before they received the reply, and another 26 years before they could answer it. The speed of light is fast, but it's not infinitely fast. We're very nicely quarantined from Vega. Let's not panic quite yet.
I appreciate those remarks, Dr. Arroway, but things are happening fast, too damn fast, and there are too many maybes. I haven't even made a public announcement about all this. I think we'd better curtail this meeting and reconvene later.
Dahir cleared his throat. If I may, Miss President, I beg your pardon, but there are some international implications that I think have to be raised now.
The president sighed, and Dahir continued.
Tell me if I have this right, Dr. Arroway. Every day the star Vega rises over the New Mexico desert, and then you get whatever page of this complex transmission they happen to be sending to the Earth at that moment. Then, 8 hours later or something, the star sets. Right so far? Okay. Then the next day the star rises again, but you've lost some pages during the time you weren't able to look at it. So it's as if you're getting pages 30 through 50, and then pages 80 through 100, and so on. No matter how patiently we observe, we're going to have enormous amounts of information missing, gaps, even if the message eventually repeats itself.
Well, that's entirely right. You know, I don't think any nation can accomplish this project alone. It'll require many nations spread out in longitude all the way around the Earth, every major radio astronomy facility. It would be irresponsible if we wind up with gaps in the coverage because some critical part of the message came when there's no telescope looking at Vega. We'll have to do something about the Eastern Pacific between Hawaii and Australia, and maybe something about the Mid-Atlantic also. The director of Central Intelligence spoke up.
The Russians have several satellite tracking ships that are good in S-band through X-band. If we make some arrangement with them, they might be able to station ships in the Atlantic or the Pacific and fill in the gaps.
The president spoke to Dahir. All right, Ken, you may be right, but I say again, this is moving too damn fast. There are some other things I have to attend to right now. Now, I'd appreciate it if the director of the CIA and the National Security Staff would work overnight on whether we have any options besides cooperation with other countries, especially countries that aren't our allies. But I'd like the Secretary of State to prepare, in cooperation with the scientists, a contingency list of nations and individuals to be approached if we have to cooperate, and some assessment of the consequences. And for God's sakes, keep quiet about this. You too, Arroway. We've got problems enough.